nice of you to come over on a rainy day like this. The rainy season. I was in New Orleans about 2 months ago. And I thought it was a beautiful town. Very strange. And I had a lot of fun there. Well, I was thinking about New Orleans last night. There's a bar called Bonaparte's. They have a fantastic mural done by a young artist who doesn't live in the city anymore. It's a picture of Napoleon in exile. And he's kind of sulking in this field, and there's a sword stuck in the ground in front of him. And then over to the left is the scenes from the some kind of it's a war scene and people in sewers, and it's chaos and all that, ghosts and shades, and it's a beautiful mural. I can't get it out of my mind, actually. A friend and I went to Atlanta for a film festival. We had a film out there, and then we drove from Atlanta to New Orleans. Well, it was a little 40-minute documentary on a rock and roll band traveling around the States. We shot about a year ago. One thing I do remember, Atlanta has the most amazing hotel you've ever seen. You walk in, and from the outside, it looks like any other large hotel. You get in and you look up, and it goes up about 27 floors, and the interior is like a Spanish courtyard. I mean, in architecturally, it's hollow. So all the rooms face each other across this vast garden arena. And the elevators are like kind of Victorian rocket ships, and they're glass. And so you get this strange sensation, you know, rising up 27 floors in this glass elevator. Somebody jumped and landed, and they have a restaurant in the middle of it, and someone landed in the restaurant, and I hear it was really horrible. I don't know why the South has such a reputation, like, but maybe these cliches are really true after all. I never really noticed that the South was any worse than any other part of the United States. Of course, I'm from there, you know, so I might be prejudiced, but I think it's a grotesque caricature. However, it is a strange territory. You bet. Well, I don't know. How come I don't have an accent, being from the South and all? Well, I watch a lot of television, and I try and obey the norm. You know? That's what the people in the Midwest and the South and all, and they call it, like the way people in California talk, they call it TV talk. You know, it's the way people talk on television, newscasters and commercials and actors and all that. It's TV talk. I do. I think it's more fun, you know, with a lot of people around. Recording studios tend to get a little dry and monotonous. Yeah, I guess the real fun is in performing. Well, we have a repertoire of 30 or 40 tunes, and so we usually plan, like in the dressing room before we go on, we usually plan, the first three or four songs, and then after that we just play it by ear. So we don't really know what we're going to do when we go out there. Usually we rehearse a couple weeks, a month or so, until we have a considerable amount of material, and then we go in and do it. We don't, well, on this new album, it's really strange. It went really quick, you know. We we went in and we got a song a day, which is kind of unusual. It was funny, the first album we did in about 10 days, and then each succeeding album took longer and longer until the last one took about 9 months to do. And this one, we went in and we got a song a day. It was amazing. Partly because we went back to the original instrumentation, just the four of us and a bass player. I think that phrase is the most horrible phrase in the English language. I don't know. It's terribly embarrassing. No, we joke around about it a lot. But actually, we just do an album, and then, every time we make a choice for a single, it usually turns out wrong. It's usually the... And so what we're going to do on this one is just put out the album, and let the public decide which one they like the best, and then we'll release that as a single.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the most realistic way to do it. I don't think we really have the key to the pulse of the nation, because we've made more mistakes than we've been right. I think, by the way, I remembered the name of that guy. It was Eric von Stroheim, the man you love to hate. Yeah. I think we're the band you love to hate. So it's been that way from the beginning. You know, we're universally despised. I kind of relish the whole situation. Gee, I don't know. I guess, I think it's like, I was just up in San Francisco for another film festival, this Feast of Friends, this film. And it was an audience that consisted mainly of young people, way under 30, you know, hip young people, street people. And they booed the film. And I think it's that we're on a monstrous ego trip, and people resent it, you know? They hate us because we're so good. I think maybe it will change. I think what it is, it's a question of longevity. It's like, it's that old thing, like a first novel. You know, they usually give the cat a break, you know, and everybody kind of pats him on the back. And then the second one, they really chop him up. And then if he does a few more, you know, and shows he has staying power, then, they say, well, welcome back to the fold. The human family embraces you. And I think it'd be the same way with us. We just have to hold out for a while, and everyone one day will realize, wow, they're just like old friends. They've been around for years now, and, you know, they're part of our national psyche. I guess we'll just, you know, accept them, you know, but now it's a little, you know, kind of an in-between. I just think the music keeps getting better and better. It gets more subtle and more sophisticated, musically and lyrically. Besides, you know, if you keep saying the same old thing over and over, I mean, it's bound to get boring, right? Who wants to hear revolution 24 hours a day? You know, that song, I wrote that very early, about 3 years ago. If you listen to the lyrics, you know, maybe it's the arrangement. I like it. Hello, I love you. Won't you tell me your name? Hello, I love you. Let me jump in your game. She's walking down the street, blind to every eye she meets. Do you think you'll be the guy to make the queen of the angels sigh? Forget the rest of it. Anyway, oh, do you hope to pluck this dusky jewel? I wouldn't say that's such a bad lyric. Yep, we're just full of surprises. Can I have some coffee, Kathy? You make the best coffee.
The best cake.
Well, the only time I listen to music is on car radios when I'm driving around. You know, top 40 stuff. I don't listen to music that much. Every now and then I'll catch an act in public somewhere. I saw, when I was in Vegas, I saw Peggy Lee, and, what was that other band? I'll go to clubs every now and then, but I don't listen to music that much. I'm not what you'd call a music buff. I don't read very much either. I used to, and then life got so interesting that I didn't need to anymore. I don't do much of anything, really. But I will, don't worry. I'll get back in the saddle, you know. I've just been kind of lazy lately. It's it's cycles of non-productiveness and then intense periods of creativity. So right now I'm just soaking it all in. Oh, I did do one thing. I just completed a short feature movie, 35mm in color, called Highway, H-W-Y, with a few friends of mine, and we got the first answer print day before yesterday, and it should be ready next week. I think it's quite good, too. It's about 60 minutes long. Essentially, there's no plot, no story in the traditional sense. A person, played by me, comes down out of the mountains and hitchhikes his way through the desert into a modern city, which happened to be L.A., and that's where it ends. It's a very beautiful film. There were four guys that made it, me and three other guys, and we all just kind of made it together. It started out, I had an idea for a film about a hitchhiker who becomes a mass murderer, you know, the kind of thing that happens every year or so. Kind of like the Zodiac character, you know, except, you know, stark weather and Billy Cook, and I mean, it happens every couple of years. And so we went out in the desert to start shooting it. While we were out there, the film took over and just went in its own direction and became something a little different. The only thing that, you know, that was left from the original idea was the idea of a hitchhiker. The only reason I did it, to tell you the truth, is because I couldn't think of anyone else to do it, you know, and it was just as easy for me to do it. I might do some films, I don't know. I'm not that crazy about being an actor. I'd rather be a director or a writer, something like that. But, you know, if I had a chance, I'd probably do a few films. Why not? Shakespeare was an actor when he first came to London, you know? If I do anything in films, it would probably be this script called St. Nicholas that Michael McClure and I wrote based on his novel, The Adept, which hasn't been published yet. It's a contemporary story about a couple of dope dealers that go to the desert to make a score. And if I do anything, it'll probably be the first project. I know people are gonna, you know, call attention to that, you know, but this story was written before Easy Rider. Do you know, I read in Daily Variety yesterday, you know, Easy Rider was made for about $385,000. And the estimated gross so far, $50 to $60 million, he said in a religious hushed tone. $50 to $60 million, that's quite a profit margin, my dear. This is like breaks precedence all over the place, because it's the first essentially independent, low-budget feature to really clean up in the old marketplace. It's unusual. It's gonna open the scene up for a lot of people. Yes, I can go into any restaurant in town and order anything I want. And I don't have to go to 50-cent movies anymore either.
I'll never stop. They can't stop me.
Let me think. I'm just so greedy, you know, just the more I can get, the better, you know, just, my ambition is to have a whole bunch of gold bullion. Is that the proper terminology? Big gold bars, you know. I'd like to have a big gold bar, big chunks of gold, you know, just to have around the house. And, you know, well, that's their fault. They're probably spendthrifts, you know. It's like giving whiskey to an Indian. Let's put it this way. I think with our, you know, with our economic system, you know, and tax structure and all that, I don't think it's possible ever to just retire and never work, you know. You know, because the economy keeps increasing. If you drop out of the economy, then it just passes you up, you know, in a couple of years, and you're left high and dry. I don't think it's possible to retire in a capitalistic society. I think, you know, I dig money because I've always said this. Money does beat soul every time. Not only that, it's a form of communication, and besides that, if you run into some good luck and get some money, right, then I think you should just keep pouring it back into creative ventures. Just as soon as you get it, you know, don't go out and buy a bunch of diamond rings and stuff, you know, but pour it back into creative ventures, you know, that are creating new things, and you can't ever go wrong, you know. Hey, listen, man, you're getting the benefit of my grand Irish wit all over the place. You're an arm wrestle, huh? But I won't be disdainful. Sorry if I was disdainful. Well, you know, it's like being married or being a member of a family. You know, there's always strife. You know, people that live together fight a lot. But I've noticed that we went through a period of kind of, it was really getting strained, and in the last few months, everything is really, really smoothed out. I think when you're creating well, when the music is going well, everybody's happy. It's only when, you know, when your creativity kind of dies off a little bit, then everybody starts feeling the strain. You know? But the relations are very good these days. I have to, you know, it's still up in the air right now, but I probably have to, there'll probably be a big trial. And I guess the best thing would be just to, you know, I might even buy a suit, you know, to make a good impression on the judge and the jury and everything, you know. Suit and a tie. What kind of a suit? Kind of a conservative, dark blue suit. Not one of those paisley ties, but more of a, just, you know, I like a, instead of those narrow, those real thin ties, I like a big fat tie, you know, with a great big knot, or, you know. I think I'll get a suit and take a lot of tranquilizers and just try and have a good time. Maybe I'll keep a diary of the whole thing and publish it in Esquire or something. You know, my impressions of my hanging. Let's talk about something light. Kathy, what was I talking about just before they came in? I was, anybody have anything they want to talk about? How about,
tell me about your new movie.
I already did.
How about the film festival?
I already told them about that. How about, let's see.
How about the school play with
Michael? I already told them that. Let's see, how about... It's a funny thing. I've noticed that when people are joking, they're usually dead serious. And when they're dead serious, it's usually pretty funny. So I think anything you say means exactly what you say and its opposite. Are you hungry? Well, maybe we could order out for some sandwiches or some chicken delight or something. You're not hungry? How about you? Are you hungry? Oh, it's lunchtime. Ooh, did you have breakfast? Hey, you should eat more. Well, you know, that's something that really bothers me. What's wrong with being fat? That's what I want to know. Why is it so onerous to be fat? I don't see anything wrong with fat, you know? I mean, I remember when I used to weigh 185 pounds. I'm the same height. I was the same height that I am now. I weighed 185 pounds. And I was going to college, and I had this food ticket at the cafeteria, and the cafeteria food is mainly all based on starch. You know, it's cheap food, right? And so I don't know what it was, but I just felt like I was if you missed your meal, you just, you know, I just figured, well, I was getting screwed, right? If I missed a meal, I just blew it. So I'd get up at 6:30 every morning just to make breakfast. Eggs and grits and sausages and toast and milk. When I go do a few classes, I'd make it in there for lunch. Mashed potatoes. You know, every now and then they'd put a little piece of meat in something, you know. Then I'd go to a few more classes, and then I'd go to dinner, and it was more mashed potatoes. And so about 3 months later, I was 185 pounds. And you know what? I felt so great. I felt like a tank, you know? I felt like a large mammal, a big beast. When I move through the corridors or across the lawn, I just feel like I could knock anybody out of my way, you know? I was solid, man. It's terrible to be thin and wispy because, you know, you could get knocked over by a strong wind or something, you know? Fat is beautiful. You want to compare biceps? Well, you know, it's in vogue, you know. I don't know, I must have been out of my mind to do it. Can you imagine doing that? Posing for a picture? Can you imagine? You know, and really looking in the camera and really posing? That's insane. I must have been out of my mind. If I had the whole thing to do over again, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't. I thought I knew what I was doing, you know. I thought, I knew what I was doing. And then the horrible thing about a photograph is once it's done, you can't destroy it. It's there forever. So can you imagine when I'm 80 years old and I have to look at myself, you know, posing for these pictures and everything? It's too late. This guy's trying to put me in a bummer, you know? That's another thing, see? You know, talk gets around, talk, crazy talk like that. What happens? You know? I mean, that's a difficult burden to bear, you know? It really is. Because we all know no one's any sexier than anyone else, right? Everybody's got the same equipment, unless, you know, biologically you got mixed up or something. We're all about the same. It's guys like you, man. It's the reporters. It's the press. People like that that create this insanity, you know, that make up this stuff. And then people start believing it, you know. Well, I must admit that there were occasions when having a reputation like that did help me out in some tight situations. And plus, I got to meet a lot of groovy ladies that otherwise I would, you know, they probably wouldn't even have noticed me, you know. So in that respect, it was all to the good. Let's see. So many schools. I traveled around a lot as a child, and I went to so many schools, about one school, different school a year, or every year and a half, I'd go to a different one. I finished up at UCLA. No, I didn't learn too much. The only reason I did it was because I didn't want to go in the Army, and I didn't want to work, and school was fairly easy for me, so I just kept doing it. And that's the damn truth. They have a good library. That's about it. It's all, you know, or unless you want to be an engineer or a scientist, something like that, I think you could learn a lot. You know, they have all the equipment and professors and all that, but I think the main key to education is just reading, basically. You could do the same thing on your own. Not too many, really. Mexico City, Canada, London, Frankfurt, Copenhagen, Amsterdam, and Stockholm. But most of the United States. London, they're very, very hip over there. And in Frankfurt, I noticed that they were quite rude. The people in Stockholm were nice. Mexico City, you know. Rather boisterous, you know, they drink a lot and really, you know, yell. We're gonna try and go to Japan for that expo thing, play there, and we're gonna go to Australia. And I like traveling around. That's the best part of this business, is, you know, you get to change your locale a lot. Kathy, can I have more coffee?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm kind of starting to wake up. This is doing some heavy stuff now. No, it was after I got out of college, and I finished up in the film school because I wanted to make movies. So you know how difficult it is to break into the movie game. So I just kind of wandered around. I was living down at the beach in abject poverty. And just kind of, for no reason at all, I started writing some songs. They just kind of popped into my head. And I ran into Ray, who was at film school also, and he'd been working in bands since he grew up in Chicago, and he'd been doing it for a long time. So I showed him some of the songs, and he said, hey, you know, let's get a band together. So we did. I suppose because, you know, the person that writes the songs ought to sing them because he's the one that, you know, must feel it more than anybody else. So since I was writing most of the songs, I just gradually became a singer. In Mexico, it's a unique problem because that place is a hotbed of political unrest. Do you know, I read some stories down there that would curl your hair. Dig this. These guys are going to school, you know, college. If one of their friends disappears, they don't see him for 2 weeks. They just write him off. They say, well, I guess they got him. Do you know, see, I think when we went down there, it was the anniversary of the first anniversary a year earlier. Something like, the government heard that, it's when the Olympics were going on, the government heard the students were going to do a little demonstration, you know, a march, protest. So when the students showed up for the protest, there was an ambush waiting, and I think they slaughtered about 2,000 young students. And so, like that, it's a very, you know, bad place for students, or, you know, people against the government. You know, they don't mess around. They just kill you. They go into your house at night and shoot you and your whole family. Of course, that's just hearsay. You know, I can't back that up with any photographs or anything. But that's what I heard. It's like a political football. You know. They let us sign up for a concert, and then about 2 days before we show up, the mayor, the sheriff, or somebody, whoever's, you know, wants to get his name in the paper, will try and cancel the show and get everybody all outraged, you know. People like, you know, parents that wouldn't even know who we were, you know, all of a sudden they hear that you know, Sheriff Peabody says they shouldn't be allowed to perform. So, you know, like that. It's just a political football. I told you we're the band you love to hate. I know what I could write an American folk song. You know, something that would appeal to everyone. And everyone would say, gee, what a great guy. I put a lot of American Eagles in it, and sagebrush, timber, boulders, rivers, mountains, prairies.